Indeed, help radio co-op grow. Co-op help radio grow. Grow your radio. Anyway, it's time for the Animal Voices show, and our animal friends are going to be along to encourage you to help co-op radio. Join co-op radio.
Yes, and welcome to Animal Voices. In this program, Animal Voices, we seek to enlighten the general public about animal-related causes. We do this by presenting and producing radio programs that deliver a message that inspires people to improve the lives of animals. Alan Jensen is well known at Co-op Radio. He is our technician today. My name is Carl Loskin. And in the studio today, we have, welcome, Marge Adams.
Thank you, Carl. I have a little quote that I'd like to read to the listeners. The animals of the world exist for their own reasons. They were not made for humans any more than black people were made for whites or women for men. And that's from Alice Walker.
Thank you, Marge. And also we have John Pranger, also well-known co-op radio circles. Over to you, John.
Good afternoon. And I'd like to say on behalf of Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society that conclusions drawn from animal research when applied to human beings are likely to delay progress, mislead medicine, and do harm to the patient. Therefore, animal experimentation should be abolished.
Well, more about that later, because today, this month, April, is, of course, a very significant day. It is World Week for Animals in Laboratories, April 22nd to 28th. So more about that later. Yes, and today we have a great program. Marge will be telling us a story. We'll be talking with John about vivisection. And so it's a difficult subject, and we'll try and make it as easy so that people can understand this message that the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society puts over, and that is so much negated by the pharmaceutical industry. So in the second half of this program, we will have Alex Smith, who is the host of the program EcoShock. We'll have him on for a whole half an hour, and all of us will be asking him questions because he puts on a terrific program which follows Animal Voices each week. So we, of course, are going to hand you over to Alan Jensen, who has a very important message for all of you people with your wallet, putting your hand in your back pockets.
Indeed. Reach down, reach deep. The news isn't that bad from the phone room. I was just checking the totals for this year's drive, and we're kind of almost on track, maybe a touch below where we'd want to be, but we need to keep pushing away because we're still a long way from the goal. We kind of hope in the last weekend that things will pick up on the drive and more people will be calling in to make pledges and take out membership and co-op radio, supporting community radio here in Vancouver and around the world, as we are heard on the internet now on co-opradio.org. But we really need you people who are out there who haven't joined us and become part of Co-op Radio to take the time now. Or if you're a lapsed member, you have been a member and your membership has lapsed, well, this is the time to join up, the time to show your support for Co-op Radio. I was just thinking a little earlier, I was noticing this morning a couple of people took out monthly sustainers memberships, and I was reminded how important they are. Most people pay $10 or $15 a month for a sustainer, though some people pay more than that. Though you can pay any amount for a monthly sustainer, anything from $5 to $50, whatever suits you. The important thing is that, first of all, it's not necessarily a big bite out of your pocketbook every month or all at once. It's like $10 at a time or $15, rather than if you take out a regular or a family membership at $50 or $75, you have to spend it all at once. You can spend $10 or $15 a month, which is easy for you to budget, and is so important for Co-op Radio's budget because most of the bills are monthly bills. There's rent and hydro and phones and technicians' costs and that sort of thing, and our poor skeleton staff here that makes their way from paycheck to paycheck. They need money to come in every month, too. And so the sustainers make sure that there is a monthly cash flow in Co-op Radio, which is just really great. So consider becoming a sustainer. You can do that through your Visa or MasterCard, or we'll send you a little form for pre-authorized checking, and it'll just come magically out of your bank account into Co-op Radio's bank account every month. And it's fairly easy for you and very simple. You know, you just do it, and then it's the system is set up, and that's great. And it's very important for Co-op Radio. But if you want, you can just do the regular membership that most people do, which is $50 a month or more. 684-8494 is the phone number. Area code 604-8494. 684-8494. 684-8494. There are people at the phones now waiting for all you Animal Voices supporters, as well as all you Co-op Radio supporters, to call in. If you think this show's important, it's a good idea to call in during the show, because a record is kept of which shows get support. And each show is supposed to raise a certain amount of money every year. And over the last few years, Animal Voices has done okay. Enough people support animals and support the idea of having an Animal Voices program that we have had good, generous contributions, but we need you to keep it up and need you to support us. I was digging around just before I came into the studio, and I found three more CDs by Dana Lyons. One that's called Animal, one that's called Turn of the Wrench, and one that's called Ride the Lawn. And if you'd like one of these CDs, why not just mention it to the person in the phone room when you call in. And any type of membership, you can get one of these CDs. If you want to take a regular membership, or the family, or the omnidirectional, 102.7, $102.70, or if you want to take out a monthly sustainer. And I noticed yesterday somebody called in another show and took out a lifetime membership for $500. And if you just like to get it all over with at once and never have to worry about Co-op Radio membership time again, you could consider that if you can handle it. But whatever you can, any amount that you can donate, memberships, the minimum membership is $25. Anyway, 604-684-8494, and I'll hand you back to Carl.
Yes, thank you, Alan, and you do it so well. And thank you also for those people who phoned in. There's Jenna Hunt and Beverly Mitchell, and the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection took out an organizational membership. So, yes, through EarthSafe Canada, earthsafe.ca, I got to know Howard Lyman. And EarthSafe teaches people, their policy is to teach people about the health, environmental, and ethical consequences of our food choices. Howard Lyman, in his book, No More Bull, wrote this: the health benefits of plants, foods, know no limit. The more scientists look, the more impressive data they develop concerning the array of health benefits conferred by fruits, nuts, seeds, beans, whole grains, and vegetables. It's pretty safe to say that science will never be able to delineate fully all the miraculous ways that plants we ingest work to keep us alive and to keep us well. Yet, never will you read a story about chicken helping you prevent one disease or another, nor single news items will appear anywhere about chuck steak or meatballs aiding any of your organs to function. Roast beef offers no benefit that any scientists can find. And then he says in brackets, and don't think that the meat industry hasn't been paying them to look. The only medical reports you will hear about animal foods concerns their dangers. The bad news about animal foods never ends. And of course, Dr. John McDougall, he always used to say, we love to hear good news about bad habits.
And yet it's insisted on that we need meat. So what? How do they justify this contradiction? Is it because in the protein? Is that the only reason that animal food can be considered good for you?
I think it is. I think that's the big selling thing about meat. You need your protein, so you've got to eat lots of meat, right?
Yeah.
I know one other, and that's iron. Liver. Oh, yeah. We were always told liver was good for you because of the iron in it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, the Dietetic Association of North America, they put out a statement that said that vegetarian diets are complete and adequate. And I believe there's some 70,000 nutritionists who are members of this organization. And that's what they said. Vegetarian diets are complete and adequate. Maybe one day they'll turn and make a statement and say vegan and raw food diets are complete and adequate.
And we recommend the diet.
And recommend instead of, well, I think the big drawback of animal products is that it has no fiber. And you know, I always say that from the time you've eaten it till it's wormed its way through your intestines and your colon until it sees the light of day again, mm-hmm. it's some 3 to 4 days. Meat has no fiber.
And that's why you see so many big bellies in America.
Why? What's inside those bellies, John?
Unmoving food. Stagnating, rotting food.
That's right. It cakes to the colon. Right. It cakes to the intestines. And, of course, it's fat. The fat of the animal, and usually it's hydrogenated fat. So it causes people to expand. Is it mm-hmm. horizontally?
Yeah. And without roughage, you cannot have a bowel movement. So cheese, milk, steak, potatoes that are peeled, carrots that are peeled, none of these things have fiber anymore.
Yeah, and part of the problem is the quantities, too. I mean, it's one thing, and traditionally people would eat small amounts of meat, but not massive amounts, right? And same with dairy products, right? It's one thing to have a bit of dairy product with your meal. Like in India, people often have a bit of yogurt along with their meal, that sort of stuff. But when you eat massive amounts of meat or dairy products, then it's a whole other thing.
It's become daily fare. In fact, it's become the principle of every meal, hasn't it?
It has, as Eric Schlosser says in his book, he says, what's the book called? He says, it's become a part of our culture. But it's good to know that in countries like India, it is not a part of their culture.
You know, it happened in during the war in Denmark that everybody suddenly overnight had to become vegetarian. You know, the death rate and rates of disease plunged. Those such as diabetes, all those modern diseases that come from the degeneration of the body. Never mind the infectious disease, although that again recurred, so that they rose because of conditions during war are never ideal, so that cleanliness and hygiene are sometimes impossible. Those infectious diseases rose, but the degenerative diseases plummeted.
That's
perfect
right.
Proof. And they went right back up to where they were before the war, as soon as the war ended.
As soon as the war is over, and I know this, those hungry Germans started eating stuff called Schlachtsahne.
Oh, dear.
Now, what is that? You speak a bit of German, John. Schlachtsahne.
Well, that's slaughterhouse.
No, Schlach is cream.
Oh, Schlach, okay.
Schlachtsahne, yeah.
Oh,
well,
okay.
On top of the cakes and everywhere. And that being big and fat... Yeah. And having a big belly was a sign of affluence.
Right.
Only if you were, let me use another German word, is wohlfahrend, well going. Mm. You were in fact what would be classified now as being obese.
So you would throw out the brown bread and go back to white bread, because that is the civilized man's diet. Because a man has conquered nature and he's perfected his food.
Now, we're going to be going on to about veal cows, and we're going to be talking about this the ships being caught, over 100 sealers being caught on the ice in in Newfoundland, and these boats being crunched. Now,
I should laugh.
Now, many of these are sinking and damaged personally.
Oh, good heavens.
And somebody sent me this
email. Bad karma or what?
And karma?
Bad
correct.
Karma?
But somebody sent me the email about this. Thank you, Kevin. And he said, there is a God. And I'm going to hand you
and
over.
And her name is?
I'm going to hand you over to Alan. And we're going to have a bit of music. Alan, what do we have there?
We have a piece called Magpie, and Magpie is, well, Magpie, I guess, is the band. This is a new piece to me, but Carl has chosen, so I trust this is really appropriate and excellent music, from an album called Muse, Musicians United to Sustain the Environment, and it's got a lot of well-known artists on it, including Magpie, and this piece is called We Belong to the Earth. And while we're hearing some of this music, why don't you take a moment to go to your telephone, and here's a little break from the talks. You don't have to have your ear so closely glued to the radio, so you can go to the phone right now and call area code 604-684-8494, and get it over with. Make your pledge. Support Co-op Radio. Keep community radio alive on the world's airwaves for another year.
We belong to the earth. We all belong to the earth. It's not that she belongs to us, it's we belong to her. It's we belong to her. We belong to the earth. We all belong to the earth. It's not that she belongs to us, it's we belong to her, it's we belong to her. A strand in a web are we, a strand in a web I believe. To own it we cannot dare to dream, it's a web that we didn't weave. It's a web that we didn't weave, and we belong to the earth. We all belong to the earth. It's not that she belongs to us, it's we belong to her. It's we belong to her. In sun and in wind and in rain is a seed of what will be.
Yes, and you're listening to Animal Voices coming to you on CFRO Radio 102.7 FM, and we have a web page. It's animalvoices.org. Many of our programs are posted on our web page, so if you've missed some of it and would like to hear more, go to our web page, animalvoices.org. So, many things have been happening in the past week. There was a number of articles in the New York Times about people now being wanting to have veal that is grown organically. You know, where the veal calves are grazing out there. So, and it's a sales position for many of these upscale restaurants in New York, and they actually mention that.
How can you have that? I mean, by definition, veal is confined, isn't it, to a crate?
No, that means it's really from a calf. So the calves are out there, but they still get slaughtered at a very tender age.
Oh, usually they are. I think they are kept in crates. I've seen them.
So they don't move and begin.
Right, and they just feed the milk, right? They have the, right. Keep them in one place and feed them with milk, right? Yeah.
Well, they're still calling it something like veal, but it was interesting to note that in spite of this trend away from the veal crates, that the American Veal Association still points out on its website that calves are still kept in crates, that these calves still kept in crates can lie down in them.
Oh,
great, great news, isn't it? But nothing is said about their inability to turn around. So North America's food industry seeks to keep the public in the dark about the ethical components of their food choices. And that's why we're here. One of the reasons I became involved with Animal Voices is because I was so horrified about the enormity of factory farming. And we'll be talking more about that with Alex Smith a bit later on in this program, in the second half. But we also have some news from the ice floes, it was from Captain Paul Watson. He sent a newsletter, and the headline was, "Over a dozen sealing ships lost in the ice." Let me reach out for the Kleenex. And he writes,
"You're a hard-hearted man, Carl."
"The crews from over a dozen sealing ships have been removed from their damaged vessels by the Canadian Coast Guard. That's fine, but the Canadian taxpayer is footing the bill for this massive assistance. The Canadian Coast Guard, that the Canadian Coast Guard is providing for the sealing fleet. Two Coast Guard icebreakers are trapped in the ice along with the sealing vessels, and Coast Guard helicopters are flying food and fuel to the stranded crews on the ice. So far, no sealers have been injured or have been killed, but the damage to sealing vessels is extensive. Opponents to seal slaughter from around the world are following the drama on ice with excited enthusiasm. Sea Shepherd has received many messages from people who are enjoying to see that nature has intervened to stop the brutal and obscene massacre of seal pups on the ice floes of eastern Canada." Well, we have Marge, and you promised us you have a little story about pets.
Yes, I do have a
story. So over to Marge Adams.
Yeah, and this story is one that was written by a veterinarian, and his name is Marty Becker, about our pampered pets. "Bedroom Secrets of Pets Revealed," it's called. "A long, long time ago, people slept in the house. Dogs slept in the doghouse in the backyard. And cats, well, they catted around and slept in the barn or alley. That was before our pets migrated from the backyard to the bedroom to sleep and from the kennel to the kitchen to eat. Now the average doghouse has 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, a spa, an entertainment center, and a 2-car garage. Yes, the doghouse is our house. Consider this. Before the arrival of our 4-legged bed partners, human bed partners decided which side of the bed they would sleep on. We carved out property lines on the mattress, but then we decided to welcome pets into our homes, hearts, and bedrooms. That was the last day any of us got a decent night's sleep. I was reminded of this recently when, after a hectic trip, I headed home from New York to Almost Heaven Ranch in northern Idaho. Between the airplane breakdowns and storms, it was a nightmare trip that took 2 sleepless days of travel instead of the usual 1. Fighting extreme fatigue, I finally made it home, stumbled into our log house, and headed directly to my bed, ready to slip between the flannel sheets and nestle under the warm comforter next to my beloved wife, Teresa. Now, at long last, I would be able to sleep. It sounded great in theory, but I was dreaming. 3 formidable barriers to my sleep were sprawled across the king-sized bed. Scooter, our wire-haired fox terrier, was lying perpendicular across the bed, while Turbo and Tango, our 2 Himalayan cross cats, were asleep on each pillow. I shoehorned myself next to Teresa and clapped collapsed into a deep sleep. I was sawing the timber and dreaming sweet dreams when suddenly I was shot in the ribs with a deer rifle. At least, that's what it felt like. It was actually Teresa's elbow that had poked me into my side and last resort to stop my snoring. Sleepily, I crossed over, I looked across at her. She was crowded onto the tiniest sliver of mattress at the edge of the bed. The cats were wrapped around her neck and face, and our 20-pound, flabby, fur-covered, thorn-in-the-side scooter was dreamily snoring away, her feet pushing against Teresa's head. But would Teresa shove an elbow into scooter, or disturb Tango, or Turbo? Are you kidding? Now, if I snore, Teresa's sure to find a way of letting me know it. And if I cross over to her side of the bed, she waits only a nanosecond before shoving me back onto my side or on the floor. But there she lay, unwilling to move a muscle or twitch an eye, because she didn't want to interrupt the fur queen's sleep. I turned over, pulling instinctively at the comforter to make sure that Teresa let me have my fair share of it. Yet, through this sleepy tug-of-war, I was careful not to disturb my scooter girl, who slept lying across me, looking warm, toasty, and content. And who needs an alarm clock when you have pets? I had managed to doze off again, but Scooter woke me up before the crack of dawn to be let outside. Again, I looked across at Teresa, Turbo, and Tango. I looked across at Turbo and Tango were kneading her hair and licking her face to show that they were ready for breakfast now. It was clear that Scooter, Turbo, and Tango had another great night's sleep, while Teresa and I were battling for shut-eye scraps. I knew the pets would fly out of bed fully charged, while my wife and I, chronically sleep-deprived, would crawl out from under the blankets to start another day on the hamster wheel of activity we called life. And yet, that's not quite the whole story. I knew full well that our four-legged bed partners had, as usual, gotten the best end of the sleeping arrangements. But I regarded it as just a small payback for the great gift of unconditional love they give us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, as I got out of bed, I paused to kiss Teresa's cheek, pat Scooter's furry head, and stroke the cat's tails. Our bed was in perfect order, and I had a great night's sleep after all.
Thank you, Marge. And within 7 minutes, we have our promised treat. We'll be having Alex Smith from EcoShock in the studio here. But before that, we'd like to thank the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society for their organizational membership to Co-op Radio. So, John Pranger is very much involved with the Anti-Vivisection Society, and so he's often said that animal-modeled biomedical research yields results that cannot be safely applied to humans. It diverts research dollars that should be going to proven methods of curing human disease on humans. Well, to give you an idea of the extent of all this, 2.5 million animals in Canada are killed every year in Canadian laboratories. Government health organizations, businesses, and public donations fund it. Dogs and cats are seized from pounds. There has not been phase out of cruel, scientifically fallacious animal models, even though reliable, non-animal humane methodologies are available. The vivisection multi-billion dollar industry polices themselves. The vivisection multi-billion dollar industry polices themselves. And so we ask people to stop the scientific fraud. Well, I have a very short letter that Anne Berthesel wrote about vivisection. And she said, "Rick Hansen is no hero. You won't believe it now, but 100 years from today, when the horrendous futility of animal research is widely realized and the practice completely abolished, those who knowingly and callously enabled its continuance will be seen as less angelic illumination than is accorded them at present. Prophetically, all these years, research on animals being made to suffer from spinal cord injury have afforded not one paralyzed human being the ability to walk again. Nature, it is said, will never reveal her secrets to those who would destroy her. And that was Anne Bethesel from North Vancouver, writing to the newspaper. Over to you, John.
Hear, to Anne. That was a brilliant statement. Well, you know, and these animal tests, which are supposed to protect us from dangerous chemicals and products, household products and so on, these tests deceive the very consumers whom they're supposed to protect by certifying as safe household products and cosmetics that cause nearly 200,000 hospital-recorded poisonous exposures annually in the United States. And the manufacturers get away with this kind of murder and mayhem and injury that they sow because of animal experiments, which they point to and say, this scientific method we used, it is available as a scientific method, and we complied with the law. They don't say that they wrote the law, but they did write the law. And so now they can easily follow this law and have an excuse to not only experiment on people, but to injure them when the experiments go awry. You see, first, the government demands that they test it on three different species of animals, two rodents and one non-rodent species. And then something is considered to be safe for human consumption in trials. So they try a few small trials, and if people are injured, well, then they'll take it off the market. Of course, they won't proceed. But you see, not until those injuries actually occur will they stop. So you and I are always at risk. These experiments are never conclusive. Any new drug that comes out, any new therapy, is always going to victimize some human patient who is not being told the truth about the nature of the drug. He is being told that it is safe as far as we know, so we're going to try.
And we have many examples like that about Vioxx.
Absolutely.
So we have Alex Smith coming in a few minutes. So we'll just play a little bit of the cut from Dana Lyons, and he says he is a tree.
Okay, but I want to say
he
something.
He can hear the bulldozers.
A little bit more. I've got a brand new video that's been made by an anti-vivisection society in England. CureDisease.net, if you tap that in, and it's called Safer Medicines, and I don't know how long the video is, but it's scientific men and victims of thalidomide, one thalidomide victim, talking about this video and
thank you, John, and over to Alan and Dana Lyons.
I don't like being interrupted.
Just before we get to that Dana Lyons piece, I just wanted to remind you, because I was going to mention before, that don't forget this Sunday there's an open house at Co-op Radio from noon to 4. And if you want to pay your membership, just have a look around Co-op Radio, noon to 4 on Sunday. And now to Dana Lyons.
There's a river flowing near me, and I've watched that river change and grow for 800 years. I have lived here through the wind, the fire, and the snow. I see salmon return every summer, and I watch young owls
Co-op Radio supporter and great musician Dana Lyons. And don't forget, we have some CDs by Dana Lyons that he gave to Co-op Radio so we could use in these fundraising drives. And if you'd like one of these wonderful CDs by Dana Lyons, just tell the people in the phone room that you'd like a premium with your membership. And, of course, you can have it. And we'll have it here for you to pick up. If you live out of town, we can mail it to you. But the first thing you have to do, if you want one of these CDs, or if you just want to support Co-op Radio without getting the CD, is to call area code 604-684-8494 and show your support for community radio. Co-op Radio is the only station in this neck of the woods, and probably the only station in Canada that has a program devoted to animals and animal welfare, discussing both domestic animals and wild animals, and the things that happen to animals and the things you can do to help animals. And we have a wonderful variety of people who come in and talk about different issues related to animals. But we need your support if we're going to be able to continue doing that. And if the stories about animals are going to keep getting on the airwaves so people within our listening broadcast radius can pick it up, and people around the world now on the internet on cooperadio.org can pick it up. And it takes money, unfortunately, to run this radio station, to pay for the internet bills, to pay for the telephone, to pay for our transmitter up in Mount Seymour, to pay for all the costs. It takes quite a bit of money, and all of the money, well, pretty well all of the money, comes from you, the listener. It comes from memberships and donations from people who realize how important it is to have an alternative, to have a critical voice, to have a voice for the voiceless, whether those voiceless be people who are not part of the ruling class, or whether it's animals who simply don't have voices at all in terms of being able to communicate directly with humans. I mean, they have their voices, but they can't tell us how they're suffering or what they need from us. And so you need, the animals need, we all need programming like this that is provided on Co-op Radio and only on Co-op Radio. So do consider making the step, finally getting over to your telephone, whipping out your cell phone. If you're driving along, pull over to the side. Don't call while you're driving, but pull over to the side of the road and take your cell phone and give us a call at area code 604-684-8494. If you're on a boat, use your boat radio. Once when I was doing this a few years ago, somebody actually called from a boat. And so we were talking about how amazing that was, and then somebody called from an airplane, and it's really true. Somebody was up in a private plane flying over and listening to us and called up. So if you're, regardless of where you are or what you're doing, you're probably at home, though, or at work. Pick up your, if you're at work, you might be on your lunch break now. Pick up the nearest phone and give us a call at 604-684-8494 and join Co-op Radio.
Well, we are very privileged to have Alex Smith from the wonderful radio program Eco Shark with us in the studio today. Welcome to Animal Voices, Alex.
Thanks so much. It's a privilege to be here.
Thank you. And you know that I wonder if you could tell us why you called it Eco Shark.
Well, two reasons, really. For one thing, I think we are all a little bit shocked about what's happening to Mother Nature, how rapidly things are changing. So we're in a state of shock, almost as an accident victim is right after the accident. They don't know what to do or say, and we sort of feel like that. But also, personally, I feel like people need a bit of a shock to get them going out of their complacency, their energy wasting. We all need a bit of a jolt to get us really moving on this.
Now, suddenly people have, it's caught on right now, eco shock. So people have suddenly become aware of it. It's become mainstream, even though we've known for many years of the degradation that's taking place, the melting of the ice caps and things like that. But it took a special spark for people to realize. What do you think that was?
For a lot of people, it was Hurricane Katrina. To see a major American city devastated without a defense, without really a plan, and they still haven't reclaimed most of those lands and are unable to.
Now, I noticed that Al Gore was going to go to Alberta and that Ralph Klein was going to be in the audience. What kind of question do you think Ralph Klein would ask Al Gore?
Well, how can we just keep on polluting, Al, and get away with it? I think that would be his question.
That's a great answer. Thank you, Alex. Well, but we would like to actually mention some of the local issues here in this short time we still have with you. And really, we would have liked to have had a full half an hour with you. And my apologies to having to cut somebody else off. I really regret that, but we want to spend more time with you. But the whole oil thing is so important. I have a quote here from an anonymous Saudi sheikh. He said, this is 1982, and he said, "My father rode a camel, I drive a car. My son flies a plane, his son will ride a camel." Now, this proliferation in the lower mainland, what do you consider to be the most polluting aspect of it? Is it the cruise ships? Is it the factory farming? Is it the automobiles?
Well, there are two things, really. One is really the commercial ships that come in. We're a major world port, which a lot of people don't realize unless they're down by the docks. But these ships, when they come in, keep giant diesel generators running when they could be plugged into land-based sources. We just haven't given them the facility to do that. So some estimates I've seen are about 50% of the airborne pollution, the smog that travels up towards Abbotsford and so on, is coming from these ships. And it's pretty easy to fix, and we should be doing it.
So, and of course, we get most of our electricity in British Columbia from which source?
From hydroelectricity, actually.
Which is pretty clean, except that it can destroy the salmon runs. What's your comment?
Well, and also we lose giant mountain valleys. But those that are in place, I think we're going to leave them there. They are a cleaner source than our alternatives. And some of the newer proposals are run-of-the-river ones that don't actually block off the river or dam up valleys. So there's more hope for that kind of development. I'm not opposed to hydroelectric power.
So what is your view about this certain people can now sell electricity power to the corporations, to BC Hydro, or whatever they're called now?
Well, that's a giveaway that's just going to jack up all our rates in the end run. We insert another six middlemen and all the stockbrokers in New York as well. BC Hydro should be building these facilities, and it's ludicrous to say to our own publicly owned utility, well, you can't provide any more electricity. We have to let somebody from Wall Street do it.
But what is actually happening here? Who are these smaller people who are going to be selling to the big power onto the big power grids?
Well, from what I understand, almost every river worthwhile has already been sold out, and people don't realize that for long, long terms. So I don't know the names of all the smaller companies, but I'm really not in touch with it at the ground level. I just see the overall picture as not being progressive for BC.
John, over to you, John.
So these licenses have been virtually given away. How are they going to pay for the construction of such dams? I mean, is that the excuse that the government is not allowing hydro because it has to raise so much capital, but these private people can raise the capital? Is that the idea?
There's no shortage of capital in this province. I think it's just an ideological move by the Liberals, who believe totally in a private enterprise system. They would privatize the roads, privatize the prisons, yeah, privatize any goods that we have in common. So they're just following their policy.
So the incentive would be for all companies to drive up the demand for electricity, because after all, they're into profit. So here we go. We want to power more, rather than reducing our consumption.
That's right. There's no cap proposed to our personal use. There's no idea of carbon rationing. So it's a wide open Wild West kind of as much electricity as you can gobble. Go ahead and do it.
I just wanted to point out, too, I was just reading a report the other day of somebody who went and looked at one of these small run-of-the-river projects that was being built. I think it was up the Squamish Valley somewhere, or up Chequemus, up that way. And what this private company was doing was devastating the countryside around. They were just sort of clear undercutting the area around where they were going to build their facility. Like, there is no restrictions on what they could do, and they're not environmentally friendly. The idea sounds nice, have small little hydro projects in all these rivers, and you could have, clean power using the small rivers without building huge dams. But what they're doing is no better. It's just on a smaller scale. You can have hundreds of these small things done by private companies that have no restrictions on what they do in terms of the way they're treating the river systems that they're using.
Well, I think we should be moving towards wind and tidal power. That's the way to go.
Now, one of the items that you always mention in your program quite often is also about the fishing industry. First of all, your wife's quite involved with that, and of course the fish farms, what's happening up the coast here, the pollution that takes place. But also, last week there was quite an extensive article about sea lions and the fish farms. Maybe you can just tell us what happened there.
Well, it was horrible, really. They went to raise the nets, as they often do. They couldn't raise them. They used a crane, still couldn't lift them, found the bodies. I think it was 51 sea lions in the one series of nets. And we've since learned that other marine mammals, including endangered species, have been caught up in these nets for a long time and not reported to the government. The government says, well, we don't care if they report it. So it's become a killing grounds. We're dangling bait out there for wild animals who are used to eating these fish. And part of that's climate change as well. The sea lions may be coming north, finding fish stocks that are moving to as the waters warm up around here. As the species migrate, we're going to kill them off at the fish farm level.
Now, you also mentioned one day out here about the amount of fish that's being used for livestock. You quoted that, a quote from Paul Watson, and he said, "We're denuding the oceans to feed livestock." This was an important component. Maybe you can use your own words here.
Well, I believe Paul said that the biggest marine predator is the cow, and that's a funny image for us to think about, cows out floating around eating up fish. But in fact, they are, because so much fish meal is fed to cattle now, and these are fish that are being scraped off the mountaintops out in the ocean using trawling. Once you trawl a few times, there's nothing left. It doesn't regrow, so it's a non-renewable resource being poured into the cattle industry, hogs, and for chickens as well.
So we've also spoken in Animal Voices here a number of times that there was a gigantic 400-page United Nations report that came out that said that livestock production was causing more harmful CO2 gases than all the cars in the world.
Yes, I think that's quite likely true. There are several components to that. One, of course, is that in many parts of the world, especially in the tropics, forests are being cleared away. And those forests, the trees are made out of carbon. And once you clear them out, they generally burn them. The carbon's released up into the air. And the grasslands or whatever replaces them don't hold anywhere near as much carbon. So that's a big carbon jolt to the atmosphere. The other factor, of course, is that cows themselves in their digestion produce methane, which is a very powerful greenhouse gas. Now we've got, what is it, over a billion cows on Earth. I think there are more cows than humans, possibly. It's expanded so much, and they're all producing methane. So there have been a few laughable ideas to collect the methane from the cows by putting pipes up their noses as they walk around. But in fact, we can't. And the real answer is to reduce our meat eating and reduce cattle on the planet.
Now, the environment minister, the conservative environment minister, John Baird, he said that if we had to meet the Kyoto obligations, our economy would face a catastrophic collapse. Those were his words. What would EcoShock say about that?
Well, a bit of a joke, really, because he was saying if we had to meet them all of a sudden next year, it would be very difficult. Well, yes, because we haven't been doing anything for the last 10 years. But now he's brought out a new program that will allow the tar sands to go ahead and expand, will allow, he even admits that our carbon emissions will continue to come up under the new plan, and he's bypassed Parliament, whereas Parliament came up with a plan, C-30, the legislation that would actually have the agreement of all the parties and really do something something, they're going to throw that legislation out, having wasted about a year in developing it with all the parties, and just use regulations from the government itself. So democracy itself has been bypassed in this new plan.
Now, I saw that Carlyle Group, and that has connections with the Bush family, they were planning gigantic tracts of land in Alberta. Did you see that in the paper?
I missed it.
To grow rapeseed, what do you call it? What do they make from rapeseed?
Rapeseed oil.
Mm-hmm.
Canola oil. Mm-hmm. And to convert that to ethanol. But I saw also a report here that we would like to talk about the efficiency of ethanol as an alternative to using gas from the ground, from the Middle East or wherever. But this report said that ethanol requires as much as 70% of the energy that comes from the ethanol itself. The only worst choice that would have been from wheat, which needs about 90%. So now growing these gigantic tracts of land to grow ethanol to then put it into our vehicles.
Well, let's put it in an SUV and just drive to the grocery store two blocks away.
Right. So that doesn't make any sense at all. Even though I always buy Mohawk whenever I can, I know that a component of it is ethanol. Mm-hmm. And it's probably from wood chips, is it? Or where do you think it's probably coming from?
Oh, it's probably coming from corn, from a food crop. And as a result of the demand for corn ethanol, the prices of basic food stocks in Mexico have gone up, almost doubled for tortillas. So they've had riots there in Mexico City. People being unable to buy food. So when you link the price of food to the price of oil, it will keep going up and people will increasingly become more hungry. I think ethanol is a small part. We can maybe do 10% of our fuel needs through ethanol without ruining the planet. But when you start going for big amounts of it, as George Bush has proposed and as our government is now proposing, we will ruin the planet to keep our cars running.
John, do you have a question?
Well, yeah, I'm still stuck on this feeding the cow being the greatest predator of the seas. I mean, that's just using the same logic as got us into the BSE predicament. We're transforming cows into carnivores and destroying. I mean, it seemed like a green revolution to these kind of thinkers, that we would eliminate the waste from the slaughterhouse by turning it back into food for the cow. But we see what that came to. It meant disease in the cow. The same with feeding them fish. I mean, that's the same kind of reasoning, isn't it? It's just stupid.
It's crazy. It ruins another ecosystem to ruin the land-based ecosystem.
How can people think like that? That really puzzles me.
It's difficult. The other thing, you know, we might mention is that climate change has a huge impact on animals, whether it's the mountain caribou here in B.C. What the United Nations has predicted is that the animals have to keep moving up higher on the mountains to find the conditions they need as the planet warms. But then there's a point where it's just too warm and there's no further up to go, and so you lose the species.
Including the polar bear.
The polar bear is another example, and there are whole rafts of them that we're just becoming aware of that will become extinct. Some predict up to 30% of animals, the things that we love so much here on the planet, will become extinct due to climate change.
So extinct species is really important, and so by up you really meant north, is it?
Well, no, I meant higher on the mountains in the case of the caribou. They just go to higher altitudes, but then they run out of room, and the vegetation doesn't move up, perhaps, and so their food sources don't work out. And the other one that people don't like to talk about too much is how the warming affects the insects. All you have to do is raise the temperature about 1 degree, and the insects will multiply millions of times more than they are now. We're going to have huge insect problems. We already do with the forests in British Columbia.
Now, with the climate change, we're adapting too, and we've already seen that with the proliferation of hothouses. So if we're doing this very unnatural thing because our climate is so unreliable, now we're growing animals in these enclosures, we're growing our vegetables in these enclosures. We see it everywhere. When you go south of towards White Rock, you see these enormous... I mean, agriculture is still... the land is still a sacred entity for my mind, but we've damaged the ecology so much that now we're relying on artificial. Isn't this going to be feeding on itself? Artificial means to grow our food because our climate is so erratic?
Well, I think we're running out of time at this point, but I have to say, if we keep going this way, we end up with sort of a Death Star thing where it's all plated with metal and everything's inside and air-conditioned. I don't think that's the world we want for our kids. So we're going to take some better changes and do better than that.
Or we'll really get to Mars and fix things, right?
Now, we have a great program coming up, and we have to go off the air. But before we do, maybe, Alex, you could give us a prediction for what you see the Lower Mainland and Vancouver area would be in whatever time span you think. A short prediction.
Well, I think we're going to become very, very crowded as people from unlivable areas in other parts of the world keep coming here. There's already a prediction over 30% of the population in the Lower Mainland by about 2030 will be from other parts of the world. So get ready to be really crowded as we wreck the other places in the world.
Thank you, Alex Smith. You're the host of the program that follows Animal Voices within a few minutes. Thank you for being on Animal Voices. Our radio program is posted on animalvoices.org. John posts our programs there. Thank you, Marge, for being a co-host, and Alan Jensen for manning the switches and doing that great fundraiser and the pitch for sustaining our being on the air. Thank you for listening.
10 people send us $50. Come on.